VRS meeting, September 12th, 2016.
This is temporary. Call meeting to order, and we'll start out with review and approval of the agenda. Can I have a motion for the agenda?
I shall move.
Second.
Discussion?
Are we going to get an introduction?
Soon as we get an agenda. You can't have introductions until you have the agenda, and then that's on the agenda, so. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, like sign? Abstain? Agenda's approved. Let's do introductions. Also opposed, which are from Arlington, Virginia. Charlotte?
I'm Charlie, probably from Selfish Run.
I guess I should turn this over. Jessica, is this my call?
It is.
Larry Neal, Silver Springdale.
Denise Rush, Suitland, Maryland, Vice Chair of Metro Access Committee.
Mary Kay McMahon, Washington, D.C.
Philippe Mizell, Washington, D.C.
Chris Blake, Metro.
Bruce Williams, Midwest.
Ed McEntee, Fairfax County.
Randall Cook, from Silver Spring.
Suzanne Campbell, from Arlington.
Will Shell, from Prince George's County.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's go ahead and do the minutes. Can I have a motion on the minutes? I'm over here, so I'm not going to do it. Second? Marissa, you're the official second.
I can second that.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Minutes are accepted. Public comment period. Do we have public?
We do not.
We have no public. We're moving right along. I'll move to the report.
As it comes to the table, as was alluded to in our last meeting together back in the month of July, it seems like so long ago. As you all are aware, the agency has done some streamlining. There were 500 positions either eliminated or slated to be eliminated. I can't guarantee that all 500 positions have been eliminated at this point. The Department of Access Services was impacted by those reductions, and specifically the Office of ADA Policy Planning was impacted by those reductions in the sense that the ombudsman is no longer an individual dedicated position. So, you know, Antonio Stevens had a position, he retired, and by chance, at the time his retirement, the position was vacant, the announcement was made. But we move forward, and so David Schaefer, who's been helping me tremendously as the Access Policy Officer, giving me a lot of advice on federal proposed regulations, existing regulations, metro standards, and local regulations and guidance as well, and just a whole host of issues. To his position, because he'd always been helping Antonio in regards to customer feedback and customer responses and concerns raised through our complaint process. So we've now added officially to his role and his title, the position of ombudsman. He's doing all the roles that Antonio Stevens was doing except the appeal officer. And at some point that might come under his umbrella as well. Currently, and since Antonio is retired, actually, I've been serving as the appeal officer for Metro. So without further delay, before we go to the ombudsman report, are there any questions about this change? Any concerns you want to raise, and maybe I respond to you? No, great. Good, that's the way we're going to hear. So without further delay, as we always have during the bus and rail subcommittee, We have the Ombudsman Report now being presented on a monthly basis by Sir David Shaker.
Thanks, Chris, and I look forward to helping you guys with this position, and you know, I generally attend all the meetings and aware of what's going on, and I think most of you know me, and also legally blind and hearing impaired and have some mobility issues, so I think I personally hit on most of the issues most of you experience as you go through the bus and rail system, which I travel daily to. I don't have anything left over from July, but what I've started doing is proactively going through the ADA complaints that come into customer service. I went over to Prince George's Plaza in August and did a training for all the customer service representatives, and went through with them all of the accessibility features of bus and rail, all the issues that we deal with, you know, priority speeding, ramps, lifts, stops, announcements on trains, fares, all the issues that all of you have experienced problems with occasionally. I explain to them now people with disabilities are affected by these. The reason is that when a customer complaint comes in for a central location, in addition to taking down all the information, there's a box that can be checked, and that box is displayed in ADA. And that had not been used a lot. And I had previously been looking in these records and concluded that they weren't particularly useful. So that's why I decided to make it useful, so that it wasn't garbage in, garbage out, and it actually had good information going in, so that I could get good information going out to get a broader view of what's going on system-wide than just what I hear from a point of view on a monthly basis, but also the thousands of other customers who are seeing things. So I've begun receiving ADA complaints now from customer service on a daily basis. I've been keeping track of them, I've been looking for trends, I've been proactively picking out some of the ones that are particularly bothersome, egregious, and talking to people on bus and rail about them, getting investigated, getting people retrained. So I think this will be a useful project to better keep on track of what's really going on throughout the system. And I'm also going to be doing some training out with the bus division to more correctively go after some issues that keep popping up, such as service animals and lowering ramps and buses and things like that. So I'm still going to hear all your comments and questions and any concerns you have. I will fully investigate and report back to you on the next monthly basis. Any questions?
David, I have two questions. Before you started, they're basically based on the same track experience. The new proposals to shorten the opening hours, you're going to have to go through the Title VI analysis. And the question I had on the Title VI analysis for impact, are they going to look at the impact of the entire pool versus minority groups, or the pool of people that typically rise during the hours that are going to be eliminated? The reason I ask that, the pool that typically rides after midnight or before 7 in the morning is a much smaller pool. So the percentage impact would have to be a smaller number of people. Whereas if they take the entire several hundred thousand ridership, well, you're never going to find that the Title VI impact. And I wondered how that particular calculation is going to be done. The same question along that line, if they do go to the earlier hours and shut it off at 11 or 11:30 or midnight, and they start at 7 or 8, depending upon which one they look to, how will that affect the initial access, their calculation, during those hours? And I'm also making the assumption that they will have buses running during that time, so initial access will run even though they're down, but will it be 100% cost calculation during the period that it's closed. Those questions, I don't expect an answer right now, but
right.
It's a research.
Okay, I will look into those for you, Bill. I'm pretty familiar with the Title VI issues used to develop in the council, so I will go directly to the person who reports the
Turn the mic over to Brian, who's here, and who's the real chair of the committee. And I'll let you know who has their hands up.
Good afternoon, everyone. I apologize for being a little bit late, but the yellow line was right this little ground. We do some concerns about railroad ties. So it's something I think we're all starting to get accustomed to around here. In any case, thank you so much for the report. And I also thank you to Bill for chairing in my absence until I got here. Are there any other questions? Larry, go ahead.
My question, I have two very quick questions. One is regarding the tracking customer complaints.
Now, can you get back to the microphone?
I'm very soft-spoken. My question first is related to tracking, tracking trends. I think it's easy to look and say how many operators, for example, get called stops. But quantitatively, there needs to be a way of tracking that to identify trends. So, A, have you developed a process to track customer complaints to really get a general idea of what the issues are? I think there's a difference between saying there were a lot of complaints with people not announcing stops and saying in July 2015, 90% of operators announced stops. In 2016, 95% of operators announced stops. So the question is, do you have a process for getting that type of quantitative data? The second thing is outreach. I've learned through my experience that that accessibility thing, when people file complaints, letting people know that their issue is an accessibility complaint or making that information available to the customer service agent is crucial. And one way to make, one reason why people aren't using it is likely because of outreach. So your question is, what is Metro or Access Services plan for conducting outreach to ensure that customers understand to, if there is an accessibility complaint as it relates to fixed route, making customer service officials know that's a customer service complaint.
If I'm understanding your second question, you're asking how are we going to let customers know that what they're talking about is an accessibility complaint versus not one?
The question is, how are you going to let customers know that it's crucial for them to let the customer service officials know that their issue is related to access and really giving detailed information about what a quote-unquote access-related complaint is.
Okay, well, that's a good question. I mean, and I'm open to ideas on that. Certainly, it's on our website. It's fairly prominent. Easily found in the search of the website, or at least the current website. If you have ideas that you want to pass out upon and how we can do further outreach, let you know.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Larry. Welcome to the committee. I know this isn't your first meeting, but it's my first meeting back in a while, so I wanted to take the opportunity to welcome you. It's great to have you aboard. You're welcome. And Doris, I think you had some questions.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I first want to say welcome back, and Mr. Lund. And then I want to say regarding the issues that have been raised, with respect to the safe track and closing early. I assume that the decisions will be made after the hearings. I am concerned, very much concerned, that there is not sufficient time to get the word word out about these hearings, nor from the plan that I saw, is sufficient solicitation of customer feedback on this, because it would appear there's only going to be one hearing. And I don't know what the answers are to that, because the plan did not, the public participation plan did not be, did not seem to be fleshed out with details, and perhaps that came out of the committee I was unable to attend. I think it will be an absolute disaster for the lives of people with disabilities, most particularly those who forward-time and dedicatedly rely on fixed route to close the system at 10 p.m. on Sunday, let alone some of the other adjustments, but particularly that one. That is, unless some significant adjustments are made to bus service. Regarding the complaints and the use of the customer service system, I think that the issue of announcements, particularly on the bus system, has not really been dealt with, and I think the problem, one of the problems with the customer service system is you either have to call in and you have to, you know, if you're calling in, you have to report during business hours, you have another number to call rather than the just one, the one number that most of us customers use, the 67,000, or you use the computer system, which many people want to have access to, but on the other hand, to get reliable statistics about what's going on out there, when you're riding on the bus daily, collecting all that information, and then in the course of your day, or during the week when you're at work, having the time to call in and talk to customer service and outline everything that's happening for that moment, I think is expecting something that should be. So I would like to suggest that there needs to be an augmentation to the computer system, the telephone system, that allows you to register your complaint and then get some validation from the customer service that your complaint is registered. I think there should be a way to do that. We have a nice fancy survey that we use after calling up 637,000, and so there must be a way for you to be able to register your complaint via telephone, because that's going to be the most immediate encounter on the bus from my experience as a bus user. So thank you very much for being able to come.
Thank you, Doris. Any response?
I do know that you can make your complaints at least four different ways. Phone, email, five different ways. Email, the link, the website, comment card, and Twitter, Facebook. I've been seeing now coming in from customer service complaints that are being pulled off Twitter and Facebook. And when they relate to ADA issues, they end up in my feed. So I can't think of any more places to give feedback other than those five, but if you have any more,
I'm a writer and who is writing every day, has to go back and forth, and has time frame to get back and forth on their logins. And I would say to you, I have no concept that if there are comment cards, I have no idea if there are a blind person that get on that bus. I never see any hearing announcements or anything on those buses. And secondly, I did not know that there was a way to register via email, I knew about the website, but not doing it via email. But if you don't have email at home, you can do it on your own time. You know, it's, that's why I'm saying calling up, being able to call and register it on the call system, I think it's going to net you more complaints.
This is Brian. I would add to that, just two quick things. One, if nothing else, one of those automated announcements, I know there's already plenty of them on the phone when you call that, the 637-7000 number, and say if you want to register a concern, you can do so here by doing X, Y, and Z. As far as I know, there isn't one now to teach that sort of direct instructions. Maybe there is, I just missed it, but and I know there's a lot of the track safety stuff that's on there, so it's a busy place, but still something to think about. And another, this is also something to keep in mind as we have a discussion later on about the connectivity, internet connectivity trial in the stations. I think that having access to some of those tools that you mentioned, Facebook, Twitter, those sort of things, even if you're in a station or underground, would allow for a more sort of real-time response to express concerns. I mean, a lot of times I'll have an issue on a train, which is true for many of us, and you think, okay, I'm gonna, as soon as I get home or at work or something, I'll call somebody or do something, but then, you know, as time goes on, you get busy and you forget about it, or it just seems more trouble than it's worth, but you know, if you can have the opportunity to respond in a more real-time situation, I think it's you'll get more more useful feedback through those different modalities that require connectivity. So, are there any other? Oh, yeah,
but for you, Charlie does have a question, and Larry has an addendum, and Denise, an addendum to Doris's point about the hearings. I did attend the meeting online, and it's very confusing, but it appeared as though they were planning on only one hearing. It was hard to tell because they said hearing and hearings on several occasions during the week of. And in the past, we have always had a minimum of three, one for each jurisdiction. And I didn't know if they are planning to do that. What they say is the public hearing is the week of October 17th. But when they verbalize it, they sometimes say plural. And again, I asked the question with the compact, are they legally allowed to do only one hearing? In the past, they've done it when it wasn't a controversial issue and there was nothing to talk about. But this clearly is going to be a controversial issue. And to do something where they don't let people in Maryland or Virginia, because I'm making the assumption they'll have it here at our current headquarters, whether that's something that's compliant with the compact.
I'm looking to that with council. I can't, in my current, even though I know it, so I can't give it to you, I'm no longer in the legal council's office, so I can't give you a legal opinion.
It's okay, so do council, so you can let her know.
But I'll go get an official answer to that. But I will mention also that in addition to the public hearing requirements of the compact, there are public participation requirements in Title VI, and
yes,
we have a huge public participation plan on our website that talks about the other things that we do besides just the formal public hearing.
Thank you. Charlie, you're next. Thank you for your patience, then we'll get back to you, Larry, and then Denise.
Thank you, Brian. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I want to make this brief. I used to be a kind of ombudsman myself in another agency, and during that time, we prepared yearly reports summarizing each month and the issues and any systemic issues and made recommendations. And it was very helpful because ultimately the management of the agency could prioritize what actions they were going to take, in part based upon the recommendations of the project that I ran. And I'm wondering if a similar kind of report exists here, because it would be, I think, helpful to anybody to basically review that kind of information.
Okay, we'll consider that. Talk to Mr. Penn about that, but I think that's a good idea. We'll look into that. that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck.
I'm actually going to add to that and say, more or less, I see reports that deal with monthly, I won't say customer service reports, but they look at some of the more egregious accessibility infractions, stop announcements, failure to pick up a person who uses a mobility device, things like that. And I've seen these things tracked on a monthly basis. On a quarterly basis. So you compare stats quarter to quarter, things like that. And it really gives you an understanding of what are the trends as it relates to some of the access issues that are experienced with the system. And that's why I was asking about quantitative data, because it's hard to dispute by the numbers. You know, in quarter one, people were announcing stop announcements more, or something like by using that quantitative data, it's hard to dispute. So if someone says the system's not accessible, you can say, well, it's actually accessible, and here are the numbers to back it up. So when I was asking you earlier, what are your plans as it relates to actually capture that data, it's actually more beneficial for Metro to capture that data, in addition to letting us see it, because we can provide feedback. But it kind of, it shows the work that you guys are doing, and it helps to sell your brand as it relates to improving access to the system. So if you can produce that type of report, it's actually more beneficial for Metro Access Services, and it also helps to improve. It shows the type of work you're doing to improve access.
Okay, thanks, Larry. That's a concept I have in mind, but I just haven't got enough data yet, and I'm not going to have to. 2.5 months to start seeing how I want to capture it. Need a little more data to figure out how to plan to capture it in a meaningful manner, but that's the concept.
This is Brian. I would suggest too, I think that because Larry made a good point, which we get a lot of reports as a committee on various issues that we have identified over time as important to our understanding of how well the system is operating, and I think it is never a bad time to think about what are some additional reports that may be of benefit to us, and then figure out how do we capture meaningful data and then put it in a way that we can actually make some sense with respect to getting a read on how well some of these issues are playing out in the system, whether it's stop announcements, that sort of thing. I'm sitting here as you're mentioning, I'm thinking about how would we track that, and what would we do to capture some numbers that would be meaningful, and I think that those are some things that we could chew on and help our the Metro staff put that together for us as we find it appropriate.
Thanks, Larry. It's a work in progress, so.
Yeah, you have input. Terrific, I appreciate that. Denise, I think you was next.
Yes, I attended the meeting last Thursday, and the public didn't get to say anything. We only listened to what the presentations were. They had four different scenarios of changing the hours. The bottom line is they need 8 hours more to work on the track permanently. Whatever the change is going to be, it's going to be permanently 12 o'clock. If it's going to close at 12 o'clock and then 10 o'clock on Sundays, one of the scenarios is not even opening until 12 o'clock on Sunday. That's frightening. People want to go to church, they won't be able to go to church. The public can speak next Thursday at the meeting, and I suggest as many of those that can attend should be there to let the board know what they think. You get your 3 minutes and put it out there, because cutting the hours for the Metro is critical, and it's going to affect all the way around. metro access service, bus service. You're going to have more buses or something. It's critical. And I hope that the AAC members plan to attend.
Thank you. I agree. Again, this is Brian, and I think it's important to remember that the ripple effects that these changes have. It's a good question. I don't know if you all dealt with it in recent meetings, or particularly the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting, the degree to which some of these medium-term hour changes will impact the Metro Access service hours. You know, they're supposed to be relatively parity, but the hour changes aren't permanent. I would question whether that would really make sense, but so I think those are important issues. Other questions or more? I'm sorry, Doris, you had your hand up again. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Regarding collecting the data, one of the things that I was trying to say is, you know, that there is a survey, so in-house, you are already doing surveys of customers, and there's a survey right after you use the customer service on 67,000, and it's, you know, done by interactive, you know, IVR computer phone service, and I think there would be a way to design questions that you could at least identify or allow people to identify immediately or near to immediately whether the issue is bus stop announcements, metro announcements, but I wouldn't lump them together. Bus announcements we really need to track. At least separately. Or whether it's, you know, an issue of the gap between a train and platforms, and whether it's an issue of, and I want to bring this to your attention, the lack of compliance with equivalent facilitation agreement with FTA on track edge lighting, which is really dysfunctional right now. That is an ADA issue, not just a quality issue. But things like that, or if the bus is not working or whatever, to get some real content, and I think have a mechanism by some modification to at least make that happen and maybe get some other information about it. But it seems to me having some of the other information, like which bus line, you may be able to do that too, because you can, you know, if you get information when the bus is going to be arriving via telephone, you should be able to at least, you know. Anyway, I'm sure you get the point. And with regard to and ditto what Ms. Rush has said once again about the impact, the major impact of this. And once again, say on people who are using that relying on fixed route, this will have totally the major impact on us. So, please try to convey that. I think you need to look into the Title VI as well as any issues involved in.
Thank you, Doris. Phil, go ahead.
If I can make a suggestion to be effective, I think we all need to think of ways that we can improve the surveys, access to the surveys, the information being referred, and come back to the next meeting with the ideas, propose it as a motion, make the motion, have it go forward in our minutes in the AAC meetings, because that's how we get change. Discussion is good, with the magic is motion. So I would make the suggestion that we've had a really good discussion right now, and let's all think about the suggestions that we've had, and let's make one solid suggestion at either next month or the November meeting, and then move it forward.
I'm prepared to make a motion regarding the telephone decision right now.
Go for it.
Okay. I move that the bus rail committee propose to the AAC and Wilmata staff that they investigate as quickly as possible the feasibility of making modifications to the telephone system so that a survey of particularly ADA compliance issues could help facilitate customer registration complaints through the computer system. And then also that as an immediate solution that the authority move quickly to have announcements on 6377000 customer service line that regular announcements on there and on bus to alert people about how they can make their complaints, and that's my motion for the moment. Later.
Okay, we have a motion. Any seconds? Then we'll have discussion.
I have discussion.
Larry, you seconding or Charlie, you second?
Oh, no, I'm waiting for discussion.
So, no, you just seconded.
We need a
discussion. I'm seconded and then discussion.
Okay.
So, you want to second?
I'll second the purpose of discussion. I want to know what motion was.
Right. Sure. Okay. So it has been moved and seconded. I'm going to attempt to summarize and discuss. I'm going to give it a shot here. It's been moved and seconded that the bus and rail subcommittee. I'm a lot of practice, everyone. Sorry about that. Bus and rail subcommittee. Ask the Metro staff to explore the feasibility of modifying survey collecting functionalities on a telephone so that the PRS and the ACC by extension can develop an ADA issues collection instrument, and that the idea of having messages on the voice system that direct people either to that survey or to other ways of expressing concerns be added as well, to be explored. Does that sound about right, George?
You got it.
Okay, great, excellent. Discussion?
Yes.
Larry, go ahead.
So, I agree with the fact that surveys should be on the telephone. I also believe that it should be done on a regular basis. I just also want to make sure that whatever is available by telephone is made available by a variety of means. I don't want to refer people specifically just to a website because not everybody has access to a computer. But I want to make sure that there is enough information, effective communication. I want to make sure that information is available in a variety of format so that people can have access to it. I further would say that whatever version is out there, that it be accessible. The telephone will obviously be accessible, but if we have surveys that are available on the website, we need to ensure that before it goes out to the public, that this information is available and accessible at the same time that it is to those without disabilities.
May I address that? For my motion.
Sure, that Doris, go ahead and then.
The point of this motion is that you can already make complaints via the comment cards and via the website and email if you have access to those things. But there is no way for somebody who doesn't have access to those things to make their comment and to make it in any kind of real time. and he also said Facebook. So so the point is to add this vehicle, because right now in the immediate, somebody, and this is an equally effective communication issue, somebody who is not using electronic media and does not have access to paper media or print media has no facilitated way of making their complaint.
So, Doris, I completely agree with you, 120%. I'm just making sure that it is a common thing for transit authorities to, even though it's on the website, may not necessarily be accessible. And sometimes transit authorities also push things out before really checking to make sure it's accessible. My point is to make sure that there are assurances, i.e., unless it goes past access services, that it's not even posted to anyone unless it's accessible. That can mean making sure that it's 508 compliant. That can mean making sure it's available in a variety of means, such as...
But it is now. That's my point. It is in every media except you.
Well, just because it's available on the internet doesn't necessarily mean it's accessible.
I just want to give Brianne an opportunity to ask.
Thank you. First, the chairman of the year, President Mike, the VMware is here from Washington, D.C. So, back to the topic here. I believe I've raised it in the past, and EMEA, Gorenji, when the survey is issued, but there's still the issue of, the public announcement system, any policy. So I was trying to tell me something and then I got a lot of my train of thought. Okay. So I believe I've offered up in the past that there's still a lot of people out there, especially in the Democratic community, who still don't really know how to make a claim. It's still an issue. They can't hear the stuff from public announcement system. I don't see anything in the station. Once in a while, I catch a sign of a bus, but not all the buses. So I think there's still a big issue about making it physically, big long, posted to people who cannot hear how to make a complaint. Okay? So I like the idea of maybe the survey more accessible than it is now, but I'm still concerned with the greater issue that a lot of people still don't know how to make claims in the first place. So I think that needs to be addressed as well.
Thank you. Other questions or comments or discussion regarding the motion that's on the floor? Charlie wants us to vote on this. I would just add from the chair's perspective that it seems if nothing else, it would be of some value to understand the degree to which the degree to which we can make modifications to a survey instrument that is available now on the phone system and add some questions that we think are pertinent to our concerns to that survey. And that also would mean that at some point, assuming we can get some feedback on the feasibility of this, that we would then want to think about what we want to ask and what is it that we want to, what information we want to collect from that instrument. So,
Mr. Chair, the intention is not to have that survey, but rather to have a
survey.
Mirror.
I see. Okay, but that's I appreciate that clarification there. Okay, that's a good clarification. I appreciate that. Okay, so we've had a call for the question and no further discussion. At this point, all those in favor of the motion to explore survey options and to add announcements on the phone regarding feedback, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions? And I believe the ayes have it, the motion carries. Thank you. Yeah, I get to use a gavel.
Thank you.
It's been a while. Yeah. Yes. Oh, you want to open that first? All right, we're going to, just to keep everything exciting, we're going to switch things up a little bit. We're going to move on. Instead of doing the discussion about the 7000 series car first, we'll flip it for our discussion on the Wi-Fi rollout or the Wi-Fi trial program, since our presenter is here. So that individual, who's our presenter?
Actually, Chuck was unable to attend. My name is Fred Candelaria. I'm the Deputy Chief in Network Communication Services with NIT. I'll be presenting today.
Is it Fred Candelaria?
That is correct.
Actually, welcome. Thank you for being here. Well, why don't you tell us what you have to say?
Okay, Mr. Chairman and committee members, thank you very much for having me here this afternoon. I'm here to tell you a little bit about the station public Wi-Fi pilot that is currently ongoing right now in six selected stations in the system. Next slide. Just kind of an overview about our time today. Please forgive me. I was a little too excited watching football yesterday, so my case is kind of feeding in and out.
No pneumonia here.
This is purely, I was a little too excited watching the Seahawks Falcons game yesterday. So, the agenda for the presentation today is to talk a little bit about why are we doing this, where is it available, how does it work, feedback survey, which is a key thing that I'll be spending some time on, day 46, and then opening the presentation up to questions. So, in essence, this is a trial. This is a pilot, because as part of Momentum, they're very deep within Momentum, was some funding for the authority to install Wi-Fi services for its own maintenance use at every rail station. This project is currently undergoing right now and is scheduled for completion by the end of the year. But internally, we kind of asked ourselves, well, gee, what would it actually take for us to make Wi-Fi services available to our customers as a way to add value? And so we kind of asked ourselves, okay, well, yeah, it's really not that hard. But in leveraging the existing infrastructure, we really tried to do this from a cost containment standpoint. We want to keep the cost down as much as possible because this is a pilot. We're doing this to gauge feedback from the community and determine, is this something that we want to pursue? And again, this is all about providing value. Especially with SafeTrack and the long headways, especially in our crossover stations, the ability to allow our customers to be able to access the internet in a way that does not incur additional data charges for their existing cellular plans is something that we were looking to do. So where is it available? These stations, Union Station, Judiciary Square, Gallery Place, Metro Center, Archives, and Lafon. These stations were explicitly and strategically chosen not just because of the proximity to not being very far away from each other in the downtown core, but it was more of a strategic move to identify stations that were, number one, our heaviest traffic in stations by passenger count. Number two, from a configuration standpoint, we were specifically wanting to know just exactly what kind of coverage, what kind of service could we provide in these stations. So Gallery Place with a very unique configuration and only having three entrances. Lafont, obviously, and Union Station are most heaviest traffic stations. But also from the terms of Archives and Judiciary Square, Judiciary Square as a standard double entrance configuration, and Archives only has one entrance. So that's why these stations were explicitly chosen. Next slide. So a lot of the questions that have been asked in the press and on Twitter have been, so what kind of service can I expect to get? And so what I share with you now is the concept of operations when we were developing what this would look like and how it would work would be very similar to your neighborhood coffee shop. It's something that is being provided free. It is a shared service that everybody in the area, or in this case the station, would be sharing. And throughput and support is not guaranteed. It's there, it's available, and it's best ever. So, what are some of the features through this? In the next slide, slide 8 of the presentations, but slide 7, I wanted to call attention to the committee that yes, there is something called Where Is My Train? This is a graphical representation of information that the authority currently publishes out through its APIs to developers to allow them to display in their own way where trains are located. It was developed in-house by our GIS group, and it actually plots the train in a 30-second update as it travels through the system. If customers were to click on a train, they would actually see the train identification information, as well as the number of cars and where it currently is in its status, as well as last update. Now, I do need to share with the committee that this site was developed in-house and did not go through proper 508 compliance testing. We just kind of threw it up in-house just to kind of see what kind of interest would be out there concerning this. And if this is something that the community in general was interested in, this is something we would take back as part of an overall full deployment of Wi-Fi in all of our stations. This would be something that we would go back and re-engineer to this particular site to be fully ADA compliant. Also, if customers click on one of the stations within Where's My Train, they would actually get the PIDS displays and see when the next trains would be available. This right here is one of the key things that is not 508 compliant, because the line information is not readily available. And clicking on a station is difficult at best, and this is something that we've taken back and identified as an area of improvement. Now on slide 8, what you see here is the landing page. So in order to keep costs down in this pilot deployment, we, in essence, rented some software and a service from Cisco to be able to make this available to our customers. There are 6 buttons, more towards the top, and then there's a connect to the internet underneath the buttons 4, 5, and 6. And then at the bottom, there is a scrolling banner that is available. One of the things that was pointed out just recently is while it does, with basic testing, we've been able to determine that it's not cleanly 508 compliant. This is a comment that we've taken back to Cisco. But one of the things that I wanted to share with the committee today is the value and need for us to collect information, to get your thoughts and feedback on this service as well as the landing page. Such that we would be able to go forth and put together a business plan to deploy this across the authority. So the buttons that are available on the landing page is Trip Planner, the Metro Train, which I just talked about, Next Train, bus ETA, a link to call customer assistance, and a link to call Metro Transit. All of the links, with the exception of the Metro train, point to the new Beta Del Amato website. Knowing that there are some issues that we're still working through from an IT perspective, we're still, that's where the links go today. And we IT recognize that not everything is working just yet on the new Beta website, but we are working to resolve those. So what happens at day 46? Through the help of marketing, Jason Meiser's group is going out and reaching to his survey groups to collect additional feedback. On the landing page of the website is also a link to an online survey, because we are interested in collecting as much information about this as possible so we can go back and do a due diligence to determine, as I said, do we want to go forward with this. We did this on the cheap, quite honestly. We leveraged our existing infrastructure, and in order to bring this to every station, there's going to be some work that will need to get done. Obviously, whatever we use for the landing page service, as well as any customer statistics that are cleaned, we're going to need to do a full procurement for that. In addition, one of the things that we've noticed very early on is, well, it's quite easy to see through our tools where passengers congregate and which portions of the infrastructure are getting most heavily used. The good news is we haven't we don't see any specific instances where performance, but if we were going to do this right, we're going to do it right, and we're going to build it out to be able to do things such as wayfinding. And specifically, we've also come across a concept of doing something like Google Street View, and doing that as a wayfinding tool within our stations. We've actually found one company out there that can do an overlay to Google Street View that is FireLink compliant. So that would be one of the things that I would be very much interested in hearing the committee's thoughts on, and if that's something that they that you collectively believe that we should put on the list of things to do as part of a full system deployment. So this full system, so this business case is going to be the overall cost to do this right. What the schedule will be to do this, and we'll present this to the ELT for consideration going forward. So at this time, I'd like to ask if there's if the committee has any questions.
Terrific. Thank you very much. I'm sure we do. I know I, it's very quick, then Bill, I'll get to you. What is the name of the network when I go to the Gallup list? I'm sure it's probably fairly obvious, but what is the, what am I looking for when I pull up my, looking for Wi-Fi?
The SSID that you wish to choose is Metro Info, one word.
Okay. And it's the same across all the stations that have it.
That is correct.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Phil, go
ahead. My question, again, was where in the station will it be available? Will it be at platform level, at mezzanine level, or out at the street level for some distance from the actual mention station?
As it is currently configured today, it is available on platform level as well as mezzanine level, but when you get to the bottom of the escalators, that's where coverage starts to fade out. We're kind of curious about the desire to have that connectivity go up the escalator, because that is a key design consideration. Another key design consideration, if we were to deploy this at all stations, I'm thinking specifically of stations like Fort Cotton, Silver Spring stations that have office and residential buildings very close to the platform. And what kind of bleed over would we have, and what could we do to make sure that, well, we were offering the service free internet access just to our customers and not to the people that just so happens to be living or working next door.
Just a point of clarification, this is Brian again. What you said it fades out as you get down the escalator toward the platform, or just the...
The escalator exiting the station.
So leaving the station.
Leaving the station.
So the top escalator starts to fade out.
We've done...
We've
done technical surveys before we did the installation, and then before we went live to kind of gauge the coverage, and it's pretty reasonable, quite honestly. And that, again, is leveraging existing infrastructure. If we were to go forward with a full deployment, I can tell you that we would most definitely be adding additional access points, especially at station configurations like Judiciary Square, where the signal kind of fades in the middle. It's not as strong as it could be, and that would be part of our overall system augmentation to provide appropriate coverage and seamless throughout the station.
So coverage at the platform level is pretty solid, but it fades as you, or is it varies on the platform level?
On the platform level, it's mostly good. It does vary in the middle.
In the middle, as you said.
In the middle at LaFont, it's actually pretty good, but when you get, as I said, at Judiciary, it's not as good as it could be.
And so, thank you. So, William and Susan, you both had your hands up. I don't know who was first, but first let me say hi to you and welcome to the committee. I haven't had a chance to say hello to you. Susan, why don't you go first, and William will ask you to answer.
Okay, thanks. So I really like the idea of what you're doing, but just some considerations that I would love to see included in it is if you're able to have it work in between stations, like while you're on the metro. I don't know if that's a possibility for like knowing what your next stop is whenever the announcements aren't working on the actual rail trains. Being able to look up, so you were talking about, I forget, it's the feedback page. So knowing like the cause of any interruptions that you're having on the train, again, whenever the announcements aren't working or aren't clear, you can look it up on your phone. Being able to click on the buttons for whatever station you're going to or coming up to be able to see real time, like what are the elevator outages, what are the escalator outages, those sort of things, to be able to use it for personal mobility. And also knowing, like it says on there, that there's a 6-car train coming, knowing if one of those rail cars is not operational or closed, because that's pretty, a lot of times when you use the metro, you go to the same rail car, and so you're standing at a specific spot to be right in front of the door when it opens, and then if a car comes and that whole rail car is closed, then kind of trying to finagle yourself to a different rail car and then finding yourself in space there. So being able to know ahead of time that certain cars are closed. Additionally, on the feedback page, having a button where you can make a comment right there and then. So like it just links you to make a comment. I didn't hear you say that one of the buttons actually took you to make a comment. It just took you to a phone call. So just having that comment, because I think you might get real-time feedback a little bit better.
Thank you very much for that. If I may, I'd like to please I'd like to respond to the items that you just shared, which are all very, very good. So the first question that I have here is concerning access on the trains. I'm thinking that you're referring to access while you're in between stations in the tunnels.
Yeah, while you're traveling.
That is something that we did look at, but quite honestly, the technical limitations of Wi-Fi and making that available within the tunnel is extremely costly because the signal only travels on average about 300 feet. So for us to be able to do that, we would have to install electronics about every 300-400 feet in the tunnels, get power to each one of those locations, get network connectivity to each one of those access points, and then the maintenance cost alone for a system of our size is pretty substantial. So our intent presenting this forward to everybody is that we would like to focus on stations alone in order to keep costs down. With respect to interruptions, station announcements, station information, station status, this is actually one of the things we are thinking about in a full deployment, is to develop a system that when you associate it with the network, it would automatically take you to that specific station's page, similar to what can be done with the new website, such that if you are at Crystal City Station, that you would automatically go to Crystal City Station and as soon as you accept the terms and conditions, and it would present to you, hey, welcome to Crystal City. This is, the elevators are all working at this location, or the one of the escalators going down on the track two, the outbound side, is unavailable, so the one escalator is set up as a walker. That sort of information is something that we actually contemplated, and I'm encouraged to hear that we're doing a bulk of mind meld here and coming up with options to move forward. With respect to the CONSA status, a dead car in a train group, the information that is made available through Metro Train, as I said, is what's currently available to our developers via the API. We would have to go back and determine if that's something that we would want to open up a little bit more. There was a lot of discussion about, as you know, when we released the API, there were concerns of security and other things, but that is a good point, and I'll take that back. There was one more that I wanted to make sure that I address, make comment on the feedback. We do have the survey, and that is a good thing. Thank you very much for that. We'll take that back to see if there is a way to, within the six buttons, maybe add seven, but then it kind of changes the physical layout of the page a little bit more, and we start getting into scrolling issues. So maybe that's something that we'll have to go back and see within the existing tool that we're renting, if that's something that we can do relatively easily. Having a feedback page or a link is a good idea. That was our whole intent of making it, putting a call out button to customer service directly. We've also toyed with, if we were to do a full deployment of this, is to actually work with our customer service department such that if a customer wanted to make a comment, not just to put it into a form of a web page, but actually engage into like a chat session with an actual customer service representative in real time. So that is another thing that we actually contemplated.
And the survey, that can be available, you know, the feedback that you said that people can offer, is that only available if you log into the Wi-Fi network, or can you get that elsewhere? And will it be there after the trial period is over?
It's only going, right now it's envisioned only to be available during the trial period. And yes, you do need to log into the network in order to be able to access that. So we're trying to use that as a way to encourage use, and you know, while you're there to collect information. Okay. That's why, in addition to the, we have had, I asked at the end of the first week, and only three people had actually completed the survey. So for those of you that can, please do.
When is the deadline? When is the trial period over?
October 12th.
Okay. And William, thank you for your patience.
Sure. Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that I had seen the announcement about this Wi-Fi availability, that you can give it a try. I'll just give you my feedback right away, and then I'll give it to you in the online feedback portion. But one thing that was a little bit difficult was my apprehension about clicking on an open Wi-Fi network in the middle of a crowded metro area, which can be a safety concern. So I'm interested in if there's a way, if you all are looking into addressing that. but also I was really pleased with it. I could see how much potential there was there. I clicked on where's my train or something, you know, whichever button that was, and it knew that I was in La Font station, and it brought up the board and exactly the information that I was going to be trying to look up. It was very quick. It was you could really see the potential there. I'm wondering if you would be, if this was rolled out, if you'd be encouraging not only the like navigation overlays and everything, but also integration with outside entities to be able to use that information in a similar way that they're using the API right now. And if each station has, somehow each station is able to identify, you know, which network it's on, but does outside entities recognize which station those Wi-Fi networks are on? Like, does Google understand that that Wi-Fi network is at long on? So that you can better use different automated services, like if there's if this and that, or other things like that.
Great, thank you. Mr. Kalari, do you want to respond? Do you want to digest?
Scribbling away, and yes, I do have some things. With respect to an Open Networks Association and your concern for network safety and security, as with any network, just like if you were to go to Starbucks or my local Harris Theater has Wi-Fi as well, and I share your concerns. And it really comes down to the individual customer choosing to associate with it. That they know, they do so knowingly that, hey, it's an open network. Security is kind of really the customer's responsibility. I will tell you that the terms and conditions of the Metro Info service do clearly state basic things like if you're going to hate sites or gambling sites, porn sites, don't do that on this network. We don't want that at all. So if we do very clearly say up front that those sort of things are blocked. But if someone masquerades as that SSID, there are some things we can do from a network security perspective to be able to bolt that down. That would be something we would look at as part of an overall system rollout to determine what kind of wireless internet security protection systems, or WIPs as they're called in the industry, the relevance of them. How would we deploy them, and how would we configure them to make it an easy experience for the customer? You know, we don't want to block everything, but at the same time, we still want to have the service available.
Sure, and that's huge. I do want to kind of stay focused on accessibility since our time is running short, and I know we've got lots of questions. So, though we all have those concerns about the open networks, I've got to agree. Brianne, and then Steve and Charlie, so thank you all for your patience. You can see this is a topic we're all pretty keen and interested in. Brianne, go ahead.
Hi. Sometimes I forget how to engineer it. We are all here, the very first people to jump on anything technology related because the purpose of buying has the most access immediately. So I did hear about them when it first launched, and I've been seeing all of the comments on the social media and all of the discussion thread amongst the deaf community about this contract. And I have to say, truthfully, I'm very disappointed. Why? Because number one, I feel like this is the opportunity for the mentor to capitalize on where you're blaming money. You guys are losing money every single day with everything that's happening around the metro. It's just your opportunity to go and say to the phone company, do you want to install Wi-Fi for us? Here's a partnership deal, pay us for it. And that's what's happening in other cities. They're making millions of dollars thanks to the cell phone carrier, Joya. Let the cell phone carrier take care of this. Why do you have to do that we have medical wheel. Now, I don't understand why the medical has to do this like that. By itself, why can't you just work with a cell phone company and let them pay you for it, let them provide the material, and let them join and come where it's needed for more. Because that's the other thing about the way you put it on the platform. Well, you know what? I shuffle all over the system. My phone works on every single platform. I've never not had a problem. I have seen my phone, cell phone carrier on a platform. Where I do have to come is in the puddle. So very often I have to wait for the next station trying to shock my customer tissue, go through the puddle again, out of service, and then get to the next platform. So I'm not understanding why you're focusing on platform for the Wi-Fi thing. The only thing I suggested was that you were trying to attract customers to increase ridership. To try to get them to come back, mind the train again. That's what I feel like you're doing. It's like an active effort to get people to start riding the trains again. If you put that thing on the platform, I still think it's useless. I'm sorry, it needs the work and the puddle. And that's the only way you're really going to increase ridership. People are going to get attracted to it if it works in the puddle. And I'm looking to try to swear on the platform because the majority of the time in the day on the platform is maybe 20 minutes. Okay? And I try to have a good one. The first concern I have is with the chat that you presented. I want that. But I don't know if you already know what here's the app for. There's already like 10 apps tracking a metro and where it is and how much time and how many cars and how many trains. So again, this is where I feel like the metro. It's leaving money when you're meant to do it. Why can't you just do a partnership with the most popular downloaded app that already exists and do a contract with something to you? Let's place them instead of saying that I will open the app. You tell them to open the app. You make it sense to find a way to possible. You know what I mean? And I'm sure they would be happy to work with you because it'd be a great partnership. And it wouldn't cost them that much money. You know what I mean? So I feel like you're not really tuned into what the resources are out there that you can use now. And why do you not have to pay a phone back for something that already exists out there? So that's why I'm coming from here. I'm sorry, it might be that you don't know what to go to. It's not about my attention. I do support, very much support. No, the most accessibility technology that there is. And I would love an app that would tell me why I'm on the train, why is there a train stop? That would be great. I mean, my homework is still pretty late on that. Well, the delay, I don't know if an app can fix that. I like the bus ETA app, it's a wonderful app. It would be great to have that on the metro, the rail, the smart. But there are already rail apps that are doing that. I should say, you're missing opportunity here for both funding and technology that already exists.
Okay, but I'm going to bring that, if you don't mind, I'm going to have other questions. The time is really flying. So thank you so much, Brian. I really appreciate that. And I think next was Steve, I think, and then Charlie. And then Doris. Thank you all for
your time. Charlie, why don't you go first? You've had your hands up a lot longer than I have.
I mean, without objection, sure, go ahead, Charlie.
First, I want to say, Brianna, I love your energy. I wish I had the same amount. All I wanted to say was regards to 508 compliance and accessibility and wayfinding. Those are really push button words for me. And I think for a fair amount of people who have issues in those areas, I would just urge you to be very attentive to what you do in those areas because the issue is liberating, self-mighty, but can also result in a real problem if you have detrimental reliance problems.
Thank you, Charlie. Appreciate that. Steve, that doors.
Yeah, thank you. This is an impressive effort. It really is. I have a couple of considerations, and you may just want to jot them down. I think that to provide what the customer needs on the station. The customer is arriving and hopefully departing quickly. So I think most of the time, in most cases, customers who have phone equipment will pretty much just continue to be relying upon the information that exists right now. The number of cars, the destination, and the time that the train is coming in. And hopefully they won't have much time to even go to the site. So I think you might want to look in your study about making sure that what's being provided is truly useful versus what's actually needed. Now, where this would be useful for is in a connection to determine, well, how many minutes do I have on this train in order to get to my connection at the next train? That information is normally done at the last minute. That's where it would be useful. I also like the idea of your liaisoning with customer service. I think that customer service might actually get good real-time information that would be truly useful because it's very specific if there was that opportunity to liaison, and that would be different than what's currently available. For me, I think the most useful piece of information would be at the entrances to the metro, which we currently don't have. Pretty much with the board we currently have on the stations to determine, do I want to go all the way down on escalators or look for the elevator in order to wait for a train for 15 minutes, or shall I take the bus, which is right across the street? That alternative we currently don't have until we get to the bottom, and at some point in the future that should be considered. The other question relates to security of phones. I don't know to what extent we want so many people pulling out their phones and working with them. That's not Metro's issue, but in this day and age, it's an issue nonetheless. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. You, Doris.
Thank you. And I have to say that I'm probably one of the less technical people on this committee. So my question comes from that direction. And my concern would be, are you looking into the price tag for pilot versus also expanding this system wide versus its usefulness and effectiveness in providing information versus the cost of augmenting what we already have, meaning the PIDs and the PID system, which does report on train arrival, number of trains, the information that we've talked about here. And it doesn't tell you when you're in the tunnel, but I do know you can actually also go through telephone customer service and get, if, when they're in operation, and get the real time on the trains and on the buses. So my question to you is basically, my concern is providing equivalent and accessible service and cost versus would you characterize this as a customer enhancement versus a basic service? Because one of the basic services that's missing is for people to be able, for example, when you're out on the bus line, to be able to find the real time if you cannot read the signs, which are not mounted accessibly and don't have tactile signage? And what is the cost of correcting that issue? I know you're looking at Braille, but you understand what I'm saying, so that there's the equally effective communication versus the cost of what may be simply an augmentation for customer facilitation.
Thank you very much, Doris. And Mr. Cutler, I'll give you a chance to just wrap up your room, because we are pretty much out of time. I would just add just two quick things, if I may. I'll take chair's prerogative. Just add two quick things, which is that I think that there are significant accessibility issues that one can extrapolate from having connectivity through Wi-Fi in the stations, as well as my table's migrating. the table's trying to get away from me. Maybe it's trying to tell me something. Whether it's through Wi-Fi stations, which I'm very much in favor of, or through better cellular connectivity in the tunnels, as Ms. Berg was talking about, which I think is also a critical tool. Because there are things, there's information, as Nora said, that we don't have access to for those of us who are blind or visually impaired, unless we can get to an app or something that, or your splash page, that can tell us these things. Without connectivity, we can't get there. We can't use apps that aren't any good if I can't get any connectivity. So there's information gaps, the things that we don't know, we'd like to know, need to know. And I think that this is an important tool to get us at least a little closer to it. Also, just one other quick thing I mentioned is that with respect to wayfinding, unless I've missed something, we do have, since I've been gone the last couple months, we have been developing wayfinding tools for blind vision impaired people through contract with Columbia Lighthouse, the Click and Go system. Seems as though it would be a very good idea that's still a functional concern to have that be something you can connect to through an icon on the splash page. So if you're in a station, because Gallery Place, for example, is one of the stations that has the description, so you're staying there, you're connected, you can pull up the instructions and figure out how to get to a different exit maybe than you used to click out of. So we have some of the tools developed. I think it would make a lot of sense to have those built in to your system. And just maybe 1 minute to wrap it up, and then we got to move on, unfortunately.
Wow.
I know. It's a lot of digest.
It is a lot, but this is all good feedback. This is the kind of feedback that we're actually looking for, and yes, I've been taking copious notes with everyone's impressions and comments. Such that I can kind of take back. I do hear very loudly and clearly the committee's concern and need for some information concerning the cell phone and the tunnels of the service, actually within this, between the stations in the tunnels. Hopefully that information will be forthcoming soon so that those questions and concerns will be addressed. With respect to just kind of looking over some of the notes, I hear wayfinding very loudly and clearly from the committee's perspective, and that is definitely going to be valued in. I hear the questions concerning of, well, we could spend the money deploying this system-wide, or we could be deploying the money elsewhere in investing in improved PINs and customer signage information at the top of the escalators before they actually enter the station. These are things that we're actually contemplating internally now, and hopefully when we have something to share with the committee, some of those questions and concerns will be addressed. Great stuff, great information that you all have shared, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Thank you very much for affording me the opportunity today.
Well, we really appreciate you being here and staying a little bit longer than your time slot initially indicated. Thank you for your patience, and hopefully we'll have another opportunity to have you here to do more follow-up conversations, especially when some of us get a chance to play with the Wi-Fi a little bit in the next couple weeks, take the survey, and have more direct information for you. But thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, let me also let you throw that in case you missed anything in your notes. We are recorded.
That's a good point. Yeah,
thank you very much.
For better for worse, we are our guy. Okay, thanks everybody. I know we all had lots of thoughts and we can go on for quite a while about this. I know I could. Are we ready for our next topic? We have the 2000 series here.
Yes, we are. In the interest of time, I'm going to talk quickly so that because I see two participants in the text that I'm going to talk about are here tonight, so we'd like to hear from them as well. I must say that last topic, which we thought was kind of a filler, actually turned out to be the topic. I never know what this committee is going to come forward with. But those were great questions, I just have to say. So, the 7000 series rental cars, you know, we've talked about these cars a lot. They're about 120, don't quote me on the numbers today, please, in revenue service right now. The AAC played a big part in accessibility enhancements in the station, receiving 18 out of 19 recommendations that were actually accepted into the final design. And I know Dr. Posner has been steadfast in working on that 19, so it's not over yet. However, one of the things that upon my beginning of the research into the 7000 series rail car and upon inquiries, that I did not find a whole lot of record and recorded documented information on was the AAC's position on the new dual-style inter-car barrier concept that's incorporated into the 7000 series. Now, what am I talking about? If you notice on the 7000 rail cars, let's start with the 1 through 6000 series trains. We all know that between each car, there are two inter-car barriers, one high, one a little lower, and they're connected to the trains like a rope or a chain connected between each car. On the 7000 series, in between the first and the second car is the traditional chain rope barrier. Between the second and third cars are two inter-car barriers, but they don't meet their rubber barriers, their sturdy, firm rubber barriers, but there is an opening in between, so there's no direct connection. And you have that in every other car. So between the first and second car are the traditional barriers, second and third are the new rubber barriers, third and fourth are the traditional barriors, and so on. Now, Metro had a lot of different reasons. We looked into this design, which was approved back in 2008. So this goes back quite a ways. It was approved in 2008. And we made sure that safety and accessibility were the top priorities in looking at this design. And there's been a lot of questions about it, a lot of discussions. And I'm not ready tonight to make any announcements, but I can tell you we are looking seriously at that design. Although we remain steadfast in that the design, the dual barrier system is safe, it is accessible, it does comply with law. It's an interesting change, it's a big change, and it has raised some questions. And I know many of you, I see some looks on your face, aren't even probably super familiar with what I'm talking about, so a lot of you probably just haven't really noticed it. And maybe that's a good thing, I don't know. But others have noticed it, and that's why Metro is taking a serious look. Now, one of the things we have done, taking a serious look, we've done, hasn't since I've been here, let's just put it like this, I wasn't here in 2008, but in trying to understand it, and trying to look at the industry, we have done a heavy analysis, which also confirmed that the barrier design is safe. But another thing we've done, on August 18th, we had an actual test at the Greenville station. We took an 8-car, 7000 series, and we had 6 participants who were either blind or low vision and used a variety of detection aids. Most used white canes. three use white canes, one who was low vision did not use an aid, another participant used a service animal, so let's see, maybe it's four who used white canes, one used a service animal and one used no aid, and we ran them through two tests. One, and the test took place at the Greenbelt station. First, we had them begin at the station entrance as a regular customer, and from the station entrance, navigate themselves up to the platform, and then onto a train. They waited on the platform like you and I would wait, and navigate onto a train that was simulating an opening with the bells on the door, the chimes on the door, the announcements, and then can you find your way onto the train? That was one test. The second test after that was done, staff randomly placed each of the participants in front of the train. We didn't tell them where. We just said, you're standing in front of the train, approximately six steps away or so, but navigate your way to the edge of the platform. Tell us what you have detected when you got to the edge of the platform, and then navigate your way onto the car. Unfortunately, and of course you haven't read anything, unfortunately no one was injured, everybody did right. Now this one, we didn't have a waiver. No, but everybody was able to navigate themselves onto the train. Everyone was able to accurately detect what they were in front of, be it the body of the train, the door, the old type barrier, or the new type barrier. So it was a successful test from Metro's perspective. But again, following that, we didn't just take the test and say, okay, it passed, we're done with this. We took feedback from the participants. Based on that feedback, based on other conversations that have been having, that we've been having, and inquiries we received, though, again, we were strongly looking at the design. Again, not making any announcements tonight, but we wanted you to be aware of that, and I wanted you to hear firsthand from two of our participants. One is an AAC member, Larry Hale, and another one, I see Dr. Krimko. And so I'll invite you to the table, Mr. Krimko, and after Larry speaks, you can also give us your perspective of the test. You want to come on? You want to help Dr. Krimko come to the table? So, if Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, if we can let Larry give his perspective of what happened and what he thinks about the, you know, just whatever. Let them speak, and then we'll let Mr. Krimko speak, and then we'll wrap up this meeting because we're kind of short of time.
Thank you very much. Go ahead, Larry.
My comments on the ingredient, basically. I think the thing that resonated with me, Mr. Cannon indicates that everybody successfully made it. Perhaps the biggest question I ask is, why did they make it? And if I tend to be a... if we looked at the numbers out of X amount of people who did it, how many of those people were able to find it as a result of training? And I think what resonates with me is the importance of how impactful training is in terms of using public transportation. And it could even be a shameless plug for orientation and mobility / travel training, because through travel training, we learn these things, how to approach the car, how to use non-visual techniques to locate where the door is located versus the point between two trains. So whether the barriers work, whether they didn't, I even had a C in that whether it mattered. I decided to go through the test blindfold, and I do have some functional. But I decided to go blindfolded just to, I felt that that would give me a clear understanding of what was going on and to more or less prove my point. And that's for people who have received training, they would be able to tell the point between two trains because they would deal with their white cane for the lack of a floor, whereas when you're in a doorway, you can detect the flooring with a white cane. guide dog reviews, other needs in locating the door. So all of this speaks to the question of training, and perhaps one of my biggest recommendations is to increase ridership and to encourage the attractiveness of using transit, perhaps a consideration of encouraging more training opportunities so that customers with disabilities are able to safely identify techniques that can be used aboard the train, maybe having that.
Did you find any appreciable difference between the different barriers that you encountered in the course of during this exercise?
To be brutally honest, in my experience, I never even touched the barrier, partly because I'm looking for something different. When I approach a train, the first thing I'm checking is to see if that floor is there. If the floor is not there, that's the point between two trains. So I know, we'll just bypass that and go to the area where the floors are located. I also, since I have functional vision, can use the lights that are located near the floors. So all of these things help as an indication to let me know where the train's located, where the train doors are located.
Thank you. Christian, you said
we strongly encourage travel training. We ran last year a great amount of money's worth of ads to encourage travel training. That did increase our numbers pretty well. So we do agree with you 100% on travel training. So a little turnover in interest of time to Dr. Crump. Who's our
scientist? Thanks. Try to be very brief, but first point I want to make is that it was extremely encouraging to be invited to participate in this kind of test because it gives our community of blind and low vision people a great deal of confidence that Metro takes it seriously and is concerned and it values our input. And I think that was number one on my list. The other is sort of to agree with what Larry said, that training helps a lot, and being able to follow along the side of the car to an opening is what we've been taught to do, and that is a very important thing. However, we were asked to evaluate two approaches to this inter-car barrier problem, and the observations that I have are that one, the chains, that is the earlier approach, actually have greater opening and are relatively harder to detect, and that in fact the rubber panels do represent an improvement in concept. The other thing, of course, is that these chains have to be connected to each car whenever the cars are coupled or decoupled, and that makes them conceivably more complicated to use. The next thing that impressed us was that, well, the space between the chains is what you might call horizontal, and while that wouldn't be necessarily a threat to somebody of my stature or an adult, it does seem to be a rather dangerous situation for a smaller person than a small child, because that is less protective. The other thing that seemed to be negative about the chains is that it is more difficult to identify them, to see them as barriers themselves. However, I do have to add that there were several suggestions that we came up with regarding the hard rubber panels. One is that they are black, and they are between the cars, and in a station situation, that is not a lit area. And so it would be very helpful to have some kind of reflective material or some contrasting brighter material on the black pads. It may not be aesthetically pleasing, but it certainly would be helpful to identify what you're looking at and to distinguish it from another kind of opening. The other thing about those pads is that they are modest. It is
start a little too high and they end a little too low. And they would be more effective as barriers, and I don't think that it would necessarily impede the efficiency of the solution if they were actually lower so that they were in fact likely to be touched by a cane, and also more protective for, say, small children or even animals. And higher, that is increasing the length of the black panel, would not seem to be detrimental either, because that would also help in sensing either by touch or by cane the character of that intercar space. The other idea that occurred to me was that there remains a space between the panels, and that is actually a significant space. Fortunately, I wouldn't fit through it, but there are people who might, and it would seem to me that it would be possible to consider a design that would increase the breadth of those panels and even conceivably overlap them. Now, I understand that because the cars move independently and turn, you need to be able to accommodate that motion, but there is a solution, I would imagine, that would allow you to considerably decrease the space between the barriers and afford greater safety. Thank you.
Right, Mr. Chairman, those are excellent points, and again, we're taking all of the comments under consideration. Again, just a reminder, over the weekend, all of you who are on the mailing list, you probably may not have seen it yet, but I did send out a newsletter that talks about the 7000 series and has a section on this as well. And there are captions under the photos for those who are blind and low vision, but also included photos of the barriers as well.
Ryan. Best ride in the nation, says Christian Blake.
That's right.
Yeah, Patrick.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to see you.
Good to have you back.
Thank you. I will send out to be a survey that the Riders Advisory Council has put together in which they wanted our input regarding the 7000 series. So I'll make sure if he gets that, she'll send that out to everybody. They wanted to have some input as far as what they thought, what we think about the questions that are being asked. Amplify is going to be putting the survey out probably quarterly, so that should be in your inbox.
Everybody register for Amplify and fill out the question on the 7000 series to get our emergency seats and our parking spaces in the right place. This is an opportunity.
So, Phil, I guess you've seen that survey.
Yes.
So, we have, I think, some additional questions based on some information we've received tonight. What you just said is key, so let's make sure those things get added to the Amplify survey.
Excellent. Thank you, Patrick. Mr. Blake, anything else?
Doris.
Yeah, please go ahead.
It's just a question and a consideration, because I thought the comments from Mary and Seth Jones were very, very thorough and important. So what I'm wondering is, in the consideration, particularly in the detectability of the between car barriers, whether consideration has been given to the type of cane that an individual is using, because some of the canes are thinner than others, and some made stuff to use on a boat. Fiberglass, and have a smaller shaft. Some of them have wider shafts, so I think that's maybe a consideration, particularly with regard to the comment that was made about reducing the gap between the gap detectors and making them more
Thank you. All right. Well, thank you very much for all those who participated in the exercise and for providing feedback today. Just wrote a question, Blake. What are the next steps from here in terms of these areas?
The next steps, it's going to be pretty quickly in terms of a decision. We're again taking all the comments and recommendations by those who participated, as well as the broader disability stakeholder community who we've heard from on this particular subject, and a decision on whether or not to stick with the dual design as currently installed, or make some changes that may or may not include a reintroduction of the traditional barriers on the 7000 series between every car. A decision is going to be made on that pretty soon, and then we will certainly inform you as to the next steps in terms of actual impact out of the field of revenue service.
So no alternative design to the considerations. It's either the new design or referring back to the old one.
Correct.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Garza, real quick, a follow-up comment very quickly.
There's a different
topic.
At the very end here, it's not up to the business, it's not up to the that same traffic is about to start 15th of September on the Orange Line between, you know, single tracking continuous between East Falls Church and the end station. And I am wondering what the alternatives are going to be in place. This is going to have, it's once again a significant impact in Northern Virginia. And I understand that this is going to last from September 15th to, I think, like October 24th or 26th. So it's a very long period. And frankly, it's law for Northern Virginia, especially for the
Doris, did you check your email? Captain sent out an email today about the hearing that's going to take place in Fairfax for the bus alternatives during that part of the same track.
No, it wasn't that. It was a Fairfax survey regarding the bus service to Fairfax County.
Thank you. So we are pretty much at time. We had two other topics. One was the scheduled topic of the subcommittee vice chair and second vice chair position, and then also Phil let me know about new business regarding the signage, the whiteboards that we've been discussing those with hearing impairments on platforms. I don't know if. How much time? B, were you going to manage the...
Mr. Chair,
yes,
is it possible we can postpone those two topics to the next meeting?
Without objection, I mean, that's okay with the chair?
The only thing I suggest on
yes,
whiteboards and on the intercom system, getting the working group together, I know I nominated Larry the head of that working group, that was with a smile. And I think it's important that we get some of the identified to both whiteboards and for the intercoms so they can work with me and work with staff. Because the idea was we're supposed to have people that are going to work with staff on getting intercom information correct and also getting whiteboards into service.
Well, that information about the intercoms was relayed to the GM last week when he was at the AAC meeting. GM indicated that he would provide follow-up, so we're still waiting on direction for that. The whiteboard issue is in progress, and I think by the time the next, at least AAC meeting, if not VRS meeting, we'll have information for that as well. So both of them can be just delayed to the next meeting if that's okay with the committee.
Next VRS or next AAC?
Next AAC, we'll try, and if not for sure, VRS.
Okay.
We'll be able to report out if one of the members are not here. We'll be able to report out.
Okay.
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 What was the term, sir?
Table.
Oh, okay, yeah. Without objection, I think we can do that again, not to diminish either topic, especially with the whiteboards, we've been working on that for some time. And I'm excited to hear that we're starting to make some progress, and that gets really important. So without objection, we'll table those other topics, either the next AAC or the bus rail is appropriate. And with that, I will entertain the motion for adjournment. Anyone second that?
Second.
All right, all those in favor of adjournment, say aye.
Aye.
Meeting adjourned. Thank you.